Good morning. Welcome to We. Good morning. Welcome to We the People, brought to you by Reading Tea Party. Here at 1460 AM KCNR, home of Free Fire Media. Today we have Sylvia Milligan with us. She's going to talk to us about all things Forest Service, and we're going to be speaking with Fred Kelly Grant here in about, I don't know, 8 minutes or so. Thought we'd give you some announcements at the beginning so we don't run out of time. That happens every now and then. On October 30th, there's going to be a bus going to Sacramento that's hosted by Congressman Herger's office. That you can find at wallyherger.com and sign up for that. It's the first 47 people, I think it is. Sorry.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
It's like 47 people. So anyway, it's going through Chico. It's going from Redding through Chico, Marysville, that area, down into Sacramento for a day of precinct walking and phone calling. So if you haven't gotten involved in anything, you'd like to go out of town and you want to see what it's like to go on the bus and do some work in another precinct, it's going to be kind of fun. We're doing some phone banking for Yes on 23, if you'd like. That is on the website at readingteaparty.com. It's in the upper left. Just click on the little thing that says, please consider making some calls on Prop 23 from home. So if you don't want to go on the bus, you haven't done anything else, and you're kind of tapping your toe waiting for the election to show up, consider making some phone calls for Yes on 23. We had those folks available for us last week.
And, you know, I was going to say that if you're still not familiar about Prop 23, go to www.kcnr1460.com and pull up the archives from the show last week, and you can listen to all the detail about Prop 23.
Absolutely. We had Anita Mangles on there who gave us absolutely a full hour of information. And our chat, it looks like our live streaming chat is up and alive today. So at kcnr1460.com, you can go on there and send us messages. That'll be kind of fun. And let's see, lots of Prop 23 materials are going to be available at the Reading Tea Party meeting tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, Bonneview Baptist Church there on South Bonneview. You're not going to want to miss that meeting either, because we have John Kupal from the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association. For those of you who you see it all the time on all your ballots and everything, the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association in California, they're the largest taxpayer association in California with membership of over 200,000 people. They were founded by the late Howard Jarvis, the author of Prop 13. Their name, it says here, is synonymous with the relief and uncompromising defense of the California homeowner. And as Prop 13 comes under attack over and over and over and over, these guys are the ones we turn to find out who's fiscally responsible, who's, you know, looking to, jack up our taxes, and who's looking to overthrow Prop 13, which would just be an interesting tax situation for all of us in a bad way. So John Kupal will be there tomorrow night. I would encourage you to make the meeting, and if you cannot, just so you know, their meetings are always taped. They're always online at teapartyvideo.net. So even if you live out of town, you can always tap in and watch.
And did we want to give a little salute to Dairy Queen on Churn Creek for being our drop-off and pickup location for Prop 23 materials?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Bob and Carrie, they are just awesome. Call Bob Wilder, hey, Bob, you know, can we drop off stuff at Dairy Queen? He's like, absolutely. So they get the...
Great folks.
They get the Patriot really Award
folks.
2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, they're awesome. And they have really good ice cream.
Yeah, they have really good ice cream. I watched a lot of people eat ice cream last week.
Good for them.
Aunt Sylvia's going blizzards.
Good for them.
But you can't see her lips move from where you are. Let's see. What else we have going on? We've got Bill Miller Auto Transport has been basically the first sponsor of the show. He has just absolutely stepped up and helped us out this month. Congressman Herger is running some ads, which also helps support the program. And I know that we have a handful of other people who want to jump in and put ads in the program. So it's 1460@readingteaparty.com if you want to email your ad request or get more information or whatever. And we're going to be back in just a couple of seconds with Sylvia. She's going to tell us all about what we're going to hear from Fred Kelly Grant.
Sylvia is the founder of the Recreational Outdoor Coalition, so she's going to tell us why public access to our national forests, if we're not careful, could become a thing of the past.
And for all those of you who are going, huh? Yeah, welcome.
Stay tuned.
Welcome to the party. This is KCNR, 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Good morning. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by Redding Tea Party. You're at 1460 on the AM dial, home of Free Fire Media. Well, this morning we've got kind of an interesting topic going on. We've got Sylvia Milligan, who is the founder and the chair of the Recreational Outdoor Coalition. And like we mentioned before the break, there's some stuff going on with our national forests where public access is slowly but surely being restricted. And Sylvia is going to tell us what kind of danger we're in on that. For the past 15 years, Sylvia has worked with the 10 Northern California County Boards of Supervisors, elected officials, and both state and federal agencies on recreational issues. She has successfully lobbied for hundreds of thousands of dollars for the federal agencies in Northern California. She's also traveled to Washington, D.C. and the state capitol a number of times to lobby for recreational interests. So welcome aboard, Sylvia. Why don't you give us an idea of what's going on?
Okay. Recreation Outdoors Coalition was originally started because we noticed that there was a real break between what was happening with the agencies and what the public knew. So we knew there was a need to get the information out to the people so that they would understand what was happening with their recreation rights. Recently, we've had the travel management plan that the 18 forests in Region 5, which is here in California, have gone through to look at the non-system routes on their forest and determine if they wanted to add them to the system or close them. The Shasta Trinity National Forest just completed theirs, and their record of decision, which is the ROD, came out recently, and with this ROD, there has been a number of changes in the forest. Historically used roads for your quads and motorcycles and whatever now have been restricted to ML2 roads. The ML2 roads are roads that are out there where the sign goes up and down. So you know when you have approached one, if it's up and down, then you can ride it. However, we have these little pods of roads, and then we have over here we have another little pod of road, and there's no connectivity without the ML3 road.
Now, you've been working quite a bit with Fred Kelly Grant, who's actually quite well known for his work on these issues. He's just on the phone right now. I'm going to give a little bio on him, and then the two of you can kind of let the listening audience know, combined, what your collective efforts have been and what roles you each play individually. Mr. Grant actually has developed the coordination strategy, which we're going to hear more about, now being taught across the nation as a way for local governments to have meaningful input into the federal and state decision-making process. Fred Kelly Grant has worked with the Stewards of the Range since the early 1990s as a consultant and the litigation chairman. In 2006, he was elected by the Board of Directors to serve as president. In July of 2009, Stewards of the Range merged with the American Land Foundation, creating the American Stewards of Liberty. Grant continues to serve as president of both organizations. Good morning, Mr. Grant.
Good morning. Good morning. I hope the weather there is much better than it is here, but I'm glad
not
to be
really.
Listening.
We have very low fire danger, extremely low.
Well,
how are you this morning?
I'm really glad to be with you. Sylvia and I are working on some very important issues to all Californians.
You want to fill us in a little bit on what your background is, Mr. Grant?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I got prepared, I guess, although I didn't know it at the time, to work with the federal agencies by being the chief of the Organized Crime Division in Baltimore for many years, and I think that's helped prepare me for dealing with some of the agencies, not meaning that they're criminal, but that they certainly are devious in what they're trying to take away from the people. Then I was in criminal defense work in Baltimore 20 years ago. 30 years ago, I came back to Idaho and was counsel to two governors, Governor Andrus and Evans, both of whom were Democrats, but very, very conservative. and I served as their counsel and liaison with the federal agencies. And then 20 years ago, I started working with Owyhee County in Idaho. It's a large grazing county. 180 family ranchers really make up the economy of the county, and they were all on the verge of going out of business. The Bureau of Land Management had decided that they were going to take all the cows off the land in the entire West. And Owyhee County was picked first because it had been active in the Sagebrush Rebellion and was looked at it as a group of rednecks, and they just wanted to take them out first. They were my friends. My dad had a history in Owyhee County. He loved the people out there in the county. And so they came to me and asked if I could help, and I discovered in the Federal Land Policy Management Act the coordination process, and Congress spelled out that process. And what it says is that local government can sit at the table with the federal agencies on an almost equal basis, and the federal agency has the obligation to try to make its policies and management actions consistent with local policy. Since then, within 2 years, Modoc County in Northern California had adopted the same process. I helped them with that. And for 18 years, we were the only two counties that were successful against the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management and Fish and Wildlife Service. In Owyhee County, we managed to defeat two listings of species where we could show that they were not endangered and that they were being listed only to prevent multiple use of the federal lands. Then about 4 years ago, American Stewards started to make the effort known, and since then, in 3 years, we've gained 100 different counties, irrigation districts, cities, and other forms of local government, and in each one that has initiated the coordination process with our help, it's working. So that's how I met Sylvia, because years ago, we tried to warn recreation organizations that their time was coming. The ranchers were first, and then would come the recreation. Well, they've found in the last 4 or 5 years, Sylvia can tell us exactly when, but the pressure really got on recreation, and now the Forest Service in particular is threatening every user of the forests throughout the country, not just in California.
Now, Sylvia, can you jump in and just in layman's terms tell everyone out there listening exactly what type of recreational activities are in danger of being restricted from use of our national forests?
All. It does not matter what you do, how you recreate on the national forest. In some way, this is going to affect you. If you had a trail out there that you like to use to go out to a certain viewpoint and view the whole valley, that trail is probably closed at this point. If you wanted to go out, a group of you want to go out and ride your quads, you're only allowed to park one car length off of the road. So you can't go in a group because there's no spots big enough to accommodate more than one or two cars. Same way if you have a horse trailer. It doesn't matter what you do if you're going out to camp. You can only go one car length off of the road. So between the closures of the roads, the where you can park, and you know only being allowed to use the ML2 roads for OHV, in some way, it affects everybody.
Okay, wait, we have to stop, because OHV is the term that I heard thrown around all the time. And when I learned that was off-highway vehicle, I've asked many, many people, what does off-highway vehicle mean to you? And people think that that means dirt bikes, quads, bikes, stuff like that. But OHV is off-highway vehicle, literally. It's your vehicle. If you pull off the roadway to go fishing, you don't have to have a quad or a dirt bike or anything to be classified as an OHV.
Correct. It can be a motorhome. It can be a Cadillac. It can be a four-wheel drive pickup, an SUV. Once you leave the paved road, you are an off-highway vehicle.
And that's the part that I think has, besides the fact that most of us are not focusing on this, when you hear that, if you don't have a quad or you don't ride a horse in the forest or any of those things, people don't realize, hey, you can't even take your kids fishing.
Correct.
Now, Mr. Grant, can you give us a little bit of background on the actual coordination program that you refer to and maybe explain it in layman's terms so that we understand what that means?
Sure, because it sounds complex, and the opponents of the process try to make it complex, but it isn't. Congress put it in very simple terms. The federal agencies are required to give local government, whether it be a county, let's just talk in terms of county so I don't get confused as to local government. They have to give, every federal agency has to give the county early notice of any plan that they intend to put into place. They have to give them early notice of any management action they're going to take, such as the closing of a trail. Early notice means before the general public hears about it. The second thing is that they not only have to give the county early notice, but they have to give them a meaningful place in the development of that action or plan, so that not only are they notified what the Forest Service, for example, is going to do, they have the opportunity then to sit and help the Forest Service develop that plan or action so that it is consistent with local policy. The agency then is required to try every alternative to make whatever they're going to do consistent with local policy. Let's say that the county says that full access should be made available in the forest to handicapped people, to hikers who are going in to pick berries. Well, the Forest Service then has to try to make their action consistent with that local policy. And what the law says is that unless there's some other specific federal law that prohibits them from reaching consistency, they have to do that. So it is a position that puts the county in a role with the Forest Service that is in fact not subordinate to the Forest Service. It doesn't mean that the county can dictate what the Forest Service does, but it puts them in an equal position for negotiation. And the real hook against the agency is they have to try to make their action consistent. The reason Congress put that in is because they realize that the use of the forests is so tremendously important to the economic stability of the people of the county, and also it's important to recreation, to Native Americans. It's important to their spiritual life because there are many trails that they use in the forest to reach the places of their historic ceremonies.
Now, Sylvia, can you explain a little bit about, you've been referring to the fact that this case locally for us in our surrounding counties may end up in court, and a court battle that could go extreme one way or the other. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yes, Shasta County has been extremely supportive of managed recreation, which is what ROC is all about. We're not for letting people go out and just go heather-skether all through the woods. We want to provide a managed recreational program. And Shasta County has realized the value of having this for its people. So when we were having problems with the Forest Service and trying to work this out and being unsuccessful, we went to the county and explained to them what was happening and discovered that the forest hadn't even talked to the county. The county didn't realize that there was a travel management plan going on and what the repercussions would be for county revenues and for the people here in the county. So when they realized what was going on a 5-0 vote, they voted to get involved in the process going on here. They did this and sent letters to Sharon Haywood, the forest supervisor, and were basically snubbed. So the county sent an appeal when the record of decision came out, and after this appeal determined that when they got no response from the forest, that they would perhaps pursue litigation. So that's the point where we are right now, and they will pursue under lack of coordination.
So everybody involved in this process that I've talked to, whether it's County Board of Supervisors or Recreation Outdoor Coalition or users or the radio station here, the thing I hear consistently is that Sharon Haywood will not come and speak to people. She will not answer questions, won't attend Board of Supervisors meetings or engage in dialogue in any way.
Correct.
Close?
Correct. Yeah, I've heard the same thing.
That's exactly right. And if I can just for a second give you some comparisons, in Custer County in Idaho, for example, they had a history of the Forest Service rejecting their efforts to work with them, and they hired me to come in and help them. And with one letter, we got the forest supervisor threatening a lawsuit. We got the forest supervisor to the table with the commissioners. They now are in their fourth meeting. The Forest Service is coordinating with them. In fact, at the last meeting, they brought to the commissioners the amount of money that they have to spend on forest projects, on trail improvements and so on, and they're allowing the commissioners to help them set the priority on how they'll use those funds. At the next meeting, which I'm going to go and, my daughter-in-law, who's my executive assistant, has taken over Custer County now. Stacy's going to their next meeting in November, and at that meeting, the Forest Service is going to coordinate with them, work with them, negotiate on reopening some of the trails that had been closed.
So the stonewalling doesn't happen in every county?
No, it doesn't. In Idaho, we have three counties that are working with the Forest Service, but it took a threat in each case. In Idaho, we have several counties working with the Bureau of Land Management. We have the Forest Service working in Wyoming and Fremont County. The Fish and Wildlife Service is working with Logan County in Kansas. We've got the Forest Service working with irrigation, with natural resource districts in Arizona. And in Modoc County in California, the Forest Service has worked with the county for 18 years. So it depends on the personnel in the Forest Service, whoever at whatever forest you're working with.
Yeah, I've heard wonderful things about Modoc County, and apparently, at least in this neck of the woods, far northern California, they're a real positive template for how the communications between the Forest Service and the local county officials can actually go.
That's exactly right. They and the Waihee County with the Bureau of Land Management and Modoc County with the Forest Service just set the pattern for how it will work once the agency realizes that the county is serious about it and intends to enforce their rights. Rights, by the way, which are based really in the 10th Amendment to the Constitution that reserves to the states and the people through local government anything that's not given to the federal government in the Constitution.
Well, we're going to take a little break here. When we come right back, we'd like to hear from you guys about where you think this is headed, and really, more importantly, everything we do at the Tea Party is based on what can people do. Because I'm sure there are people listening to this that are going, I didn't know that was happening, and now that I know, what can I do about it? We need to give people some positive ways that they can get involved and make a difference, because I would imagine this problem, like all the others, is solved by numbers. So at this point, we're going to take a little break. You are listening to We the People, hosted by the Reading Tea Party on KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Reading, home of Free Fire Media.
This is Mayor.
To We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. So we've got a caller on the line. Kay, good morning.
Hi, Erin and Elizabeth. This is an interesting program.
Thank you.
I was just wondering, I wanted to ask your guests if the roads that they closed in the National Forest in Modoc County, if in the early 1970s, if they've reopened them. They closed them, and they made great big gashes in them so people couldn't go back, you know, like out of Fort Bidwell and around, so they couldn't go fishing. And I think they also at the same time did it in Mendocino County.
Anybody have an answer to that?
Yeah, this is Fred Grant again. In Modoc County, they've made real progress with the Forest Service since that time. Modoc County got involved in the coordination process in probably 1991 or two, and since that time they've made real progress with the Modoc Forest, including getting them eliminated from the Sierra Nevada complex program. So I'm sure that some of those roads have been opened. I've not asked Sean Curtis specifically about
that. Well, I think that's really important because there's a lot of good fishing places up there on the roads that they closed off.
I can tell you that if you contact Sean Curtis and Sylvia, I'm sure can give you his contact information either
John
off
Curtis.
The air or on the air. He can tell you specifically about every road because what I do know is that Modoc County is the one county that got a favorable result in their travel management plan. When this new wave of close downs of the forests began, it began from directives from Washington, D.C., and it's in one of the programs that I admire the Tea Party for coming forward in the last year or so to fight this centralization of government in Washington, D.C. They wanted to close the forests down, and their excuse was that they didn't have money to manage the roads. Well, that's a fake excuse because they weren't managing them anyhow. When this order came down, the Forest Service in Modoc County sat down with the commissioners and worked out a plan where every road that the commissioners said was important to their citizens, they left open. And so I'm sure in that process maybe some of those roads were reopened or alternate routes to the sites, the fishing sites and so on, were
made
available.
Yeah, because they were closed by Washington, D.C. in about 71, 72.
Exactly, exactly. And then in the 90s, in the early 90s, in just about 2-3 years ago, the new order came down to close even more roads than had been closed. And in effect, they were to close down the forest to all use.
Now, Mr. Graham, one thing I'd like to interject real quickly, we've established that this would severely, if not completely, eliminate the ability to hike and camp and backpack and ride horses, and mm-hmm. the list goes on and on. Can we talk a little bit about fire management in the national forests with the roads closed and how that will be affected?
I think they had problems with that in the other county I mentioned.
Mendocino
County in 87, they had problems. They
yes.
couldn't get in to
yes,
fight
they
the
did.
Fires.
And the policy of the Forest Service right now is not to strenuously fight forest fires. As a matter of fact, if there's a wilderness area connected with the fire, they will not go into the wilderness to fight the fire. There's a great book by Rocky Barker, who's an environmentalist reporter for the Idaho Statesman, called The Burning of Yellowstone. And that's when the policy of the Forest Service began to change to let the fires burn. Part of this is because of an extreme environmentalist impact on the Forest Service that claims that those fires are natural and they should be left to burn because that's the way of nature.
Yeah, but it's bad for people breathing.
It certainly is. It's bad for people breathing, and it's bad for the forest because
yes, it is.
The Forest Service doesn't go in after the fire. The damage is done to wildlife and the trees by the fire, but then the real damage becomes effective because so many trees are left burned and fallen and diseased, and the Forest Service will not go in and clean them up. And so what it ends up with is an unhealthy forest for decades then.
Mr. Grant, you brought up an interesting point there, and I can feel people thinking this on the other side because it was my first question on this topic. Why? Why would the Forest Service do this? I mean, what's the logic
what's
behind this?
Well, in the let me say two things to that. First of all, the first interest, the interest that they put forward is one of money. That they don't have money to maintain the forest, that they don't have money to plan for the forest. We have some eastern congressmen who are prepared, if the Democrats control the Senate, for example, there are some eastern senators who will control the committees that regulate the Forest Service, and they're not interested in spending money on protecting the national forests in the western states. But it's more than that. I've studied this over pretty intensively over the last 7 or 8 years now. I used to believe that people who talked about conspiracies to close down the federal lands were just conspiratorialists, were kind of nuts. And now I'm one of those nuts. I've connected the dots enough to realize that there are extreme environmentalists who want to remove human beings from vast corridors of land between Canada and Mexico and Central America. We have maps that now show all of these ecosystem plans that would actually close down huge corridors in California, in the Intermountain states, in the Midwestern states, and even in the Eastern states, where human activities would just be eliminated in those corridors. And this forest close down is one of the efforts at establishing those corridors, which we call kind of rewilding the country. There are actually environmental groups who have gained an advantage over us with the Forest Service because they've worked on them for 30 years to develop this plan to take human beings out of the element in the forests.
Well, that was kind of the answer I was afraid of, and so we can all now be on the same page.
Yeah, it is. It is true. There's just no doubt about it. When you go back and begin to connect the dots and see where all this came from, there's no doubt about it that these rewilding corridors. There's a bill in Congress right now called the Wildlife Corridor Act. And it literally would establish these corridors all across the United States.
So what? So at this point, you know, the people that are biting their nails out there that have just learned about all this, where can they go to get more information, and what can they do? How can they help?
Well, I'm going to let Sylvia give the folks in your area her contact information. One of the important things right now is that they contact Sylvia. We have efforts right now to help Shasta and Siskiyou counties in California go to court if they have to. I'm also helping them right now try to get some impact with the Chief of the Forest Service, Tom Tidwell, in Washington, D.C., to try to get his forests all on the same page with regard to coordination. If that doesn't happen, then we have to go to a lawsuit. And there will be a lot of counties that will join it, but they need support. So I'm going to give have her give her contact information however she wants to. In the meantime, also, there are some websites that we can go to. One of them is going to be mine, called War on Rural America, which will be up on November the 1st, and we'll have all the details. In December, we expect, regardless of whether Senator Reid is elected or not elected, we expect him to put together a group of bills that he will try to push through in that lame duck session that will establish these corridors. The Clean Water Restoration Act will give the Corps of Engineers of the United States authority over every piece of water and every piece of land in the United States. There's another bill that will give $900 million a year for 40 years to the states to buy up private property.
Don't we already have that? Don't we call that the Nature Conservancy now?
Well, the Nature Conservancy has been involved in a lot of these bills, and they do support that. What this will do is give another, whatever that comes to, I think it's $300 billion over 40 years to the states to actually buy private land. And, of course, all that private land that is bought up reduces the tax base for local government. And, you know, local government's really the only government that gives people any services.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And Mr. Grant, in layman's terms, basically, this is a land grab and possibly an effort to, over time, move the population from the rural areas into urban areas?
Absolutely. That's the whole purpose of the whole smart growth zoning movement. If you go back 30 years and even less, you'll find articles that were written that say that that one of the reasons, one of the things that stand in the way of world government is the fact that Americans are paranoid about owning private property, and that they have to find a way to get control of that private property into the government. One article said eminent domain, which is what our Constitution calls for, is too expensive, so we're going to have to find less expensive ways to take control of private property. And one of the ways that he identified was conservation easements, and that's the way the Nature Conservancy has gained control of millions and millions of acres of private property already.
With our money.
Yes, yes, yeah. Exactly, with federal money.
How convenient.
With our taxpayer money.
So, Sylvia, do you want to tell us on a local level how the folks can get involved? Some real concrete ideas for people to take action?
Okay, probably the first thing we need to do is we're working on forming a very, very large coalition of people who are interested in this particular issue. And the way that you can get involved in that is if you want to use this email address until we get this coalition up and running, you can email Forest, F-O-R-E-S-T, at readingteaparty.com. Let us know that you want your name put on the list. What we're doing here locally is the county is willing to litigate with the Forest Service to protect our right to recreate. However, we all know that the county is very, very short of funds. So what we're trying to do is raise as much money as we can to help the county. And when Fred and I met with the counties, I told them that I would like to see Fred Kelly Grant involved in any litigation that we do because he knows and understands coordination. He's worked with it for a long time. So we need to raise money for his expenses on this also. So we need to raise as much money as we possibly can. So far, we've been getting money in from even Southern California, from all over, because this lawsuit is so extremely important. If we can win with this one, it will help other counties be able to use it with their local forests.
Okay. All right. One more issue, folks. So on that note, I'd like to thank Sylvia and Fred Kelly Grant very much for joining us on the show today. This is a critical issue, and folks, I know they're coming at you from all sides, but if you like to take a hike and you like to camp with your kids, you might want to pay attention to this particular issue. And again, go to the email address again is forest@readingteaparty.com.
Thank you, Fred Kelly Grant. You are the man that we never seem to be able to hear because we're all busy when you come to town. Thank you for joining us on the radio.
You're very welcome. I really admire the work that you folks do because this is not a Republican or Democrat issue.
No.
It's an American issue. And I really believe that that's the foundation for the Tea Party movement.
Thank you for recognizing that.
Absolutely. You jumped right in on the limited government part.
Yes, that's right.
Great.
Thank you for all you do.
You're very welcome.
Hey, we've got a little visitor here this morning. Who walked in but Chris Young, running for Supervisor District 5. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are we doing?
We're doing great.
We've determined that the Forest Service is making a massive land grab using our money and trying to lock us out of the woods. Of course, we kind of knew that, but we had to get the details put together.
I was driving around town listening to you, and this is right up my alley. Limited government, personal responsibility, losing our freedom one little increment at a time. This is what my campaign's all about.
Well, and you tie in nicely because you're running for Board of Supervisors, and these are the guys that are standing up against the Forest Service at this point. So where are you on all that?
Like I just said, we didn't get in this position overnight. As Fred Kelly Grant said a few minutes ago, this came about over 30 years and longer. We lose our freedoms one little increment at a time, one city councilman, one county supervisor, one state assemblyman at a time that votes the wrong way on an issue, on an issue that they make a compromise and give up a little freedom here so they can gain a traffic signal there or some other little thing, you compromise away your freedoms.
And it seems like not a big deal, and all of a sudden, one day we wake up and we go, they're doing what?
Right.
Yeah, it's boiling the frog in slow, warm water.
So how goes the campaign?
Oh, it's exciting. It's going good. We're down to 1 week, week and 2 days left, and they say they have some fairly accurate polling on November 2nd that will determine who's ahead and who's behind on this.
That's
thing.
So bizarre. I was just going to ask you that, because in races like county supervisor, city council, that kind of thing, you don't have the polling data that you have, you know, with the federal stuff that you can watch all the time. So what do you do?
You walk down the street and you knock on doors and you introduce yourself and ask for support. And some people say, thanks for coming by, and close the door. And some people leap out on the front porch and almost give you a hug, and they're enthusiastically supporting you. And you get kind of a feel of who's behind you and who's not.
What's the big thing? What are they telling you? You better fix whatever. You better do whatever.
The big thing is private property rights and public safety issues.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go, the supervisors' districts cover rural and city areas, and it doesn't matter if your police power service provider is the city cop or the sheriff's department, the police. And issues are the big concern, and private property rights are a big concern. That's what people want to talk about.
Hey, Chris, don't you think this election, not just at a local level, but nationwide, is probably one of the most pivotal in our lifetime?
You hear that almost every election. You hear somebody.
Come on, just trying to get people to get out there and vote.
Help us out. That was a leading question.
I really do think that this time around, it really is a pivotal time. The pendulum has swung way far to one direction, and I think that a lot of people nationwide are looking to at least start the pendulum swinging back the other direction.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to continue with that idea. If you'd like to ask Chris or Sylvia questions, we still got Sylvia trapped in here in the small room. We're going to take just a second of a break here and acknowledge our advertisers. Thanks again to Bill Miller Auto Transport. He is the man, and you'll hear from the rest of them here shortly. This is KCNR 1460 AM.
Be the People, brought to you by Reading Tea Party. Don't forget to join our chat room at www.kcnr1460.com. So, Sylvia, back to you real quick. Do you want to give us some information on where people could make a donation?
Yes. If you would like to make a donation to help us support the county in this litigation and to involve Fred Kelly Grant, if you'll go to forest@teaparty.com, and we will get the information out to you.
Yep, forest@readingteaparty.com. That's going to be your contact, and then Sylvia will get back to you with anything you need to know, because obviously you don't take on the Forest Service free, because we don't have access to the same amount of money they do.
Yeah.
Funny how that works.
We can't print it like they can. I think that's against the law. Counterfeiting, I believe. So, Chris, what's up for the next week?
The week.
The final week. Just meeting people, knocking on doors and talking to people, and introducing myself to people I haven't met before and asking for support. It's pretty much the sprint to the finish.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yeah. We've really enjoyed getting to know a lot of the different candidates on Monday nights. You've been coming ever since before the primary, and so I know a lot of people. We haven't done supervisor debates. We've had so much stuff going on with City of Reading, and so you guys kind of gotten shuffled off to Buffalo, but I see you talking to people every Monday night.
Yeah, you're regular.
It's amazing how the focus in the media is pretty much on the Reading City Council race. What about those poor guys in Anderson?
Nobody, if you could just get some union controversy.
Now we need to start a tea party in Anderson. That's what we need to do.
Is there, I guess maybe there's not a race in Cheslake City this cycle?
I don't believe there is.
Haven't
heard a word from those guys.
Anyway, the focus has been mostly Redding City Council, and there is a county supervisor race in District 5. It's the only countywide race that was not determined in the primary.
And that is why, for those that don't know?
Well, in the county races, if you've got two people running for one seat, it's determined in the primary in June this year. If there's three, then the top two finishers, if there's three or more, the top two finishers go to the general election in November. And all the other countywide races either were uncontested or there were only two candidates. It was decided in June. And the District 5 supervisor race is the only one where there were three or more.
Because you guys had like a tie or something.
No, it's just one.
Isn't there a certain percentage?
One candidate has to get 50% plus one vote to win in the primary. If that doesn't happen, then the top two finishers go to the general election for a runoff.
Okay.
So it's a modified tie. I just don't want to take that away as a win.
Yeah.
Okay.
Throw me under the bus this early.
So, Chris, if people have questions for you or want to make donations to your campaign, how do they contact you?
Well, they can call me at 221-9653, or they can go to my website, www.young45.com. That's Young, the numeral 4, FIVE.com.
Fun. And now District 5 goes all over the place.
Well,
it's not just in the Anderson area.
It's the southern strip of the county. Cottonwood, Anderson, Millville, Shingletown, Viola, Manton, Churn Creek Bottom, a little corner of southeast Redding around Rancho and Shasta View, the western ranches area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is quite a strip.
It is. You swirl around Palisadro. You hit parts of it, but not all of it. And
right.
I see your signs at different places. I go, well, how come he's not our guy? Funny.
So you've been traveling a lot all those areas now for quite some time.
Absolutely. I've been running for this office hard for 18 months, traveling from Cottonwood to Viola back and forth, sometimes a couple times a day, meeting with different groups, meeting with individuals, knocking on doors, wherever there's somebody you can talk to, you know, like if there's a three-family yard sale, show up.
Pull over. Okay, so the seat that you're looking to fill, what are you bringing to it that isn't there already?
A determination to get our priorities straight. You know, first and foremost, we've got to have law enforcement funded in the county. And then jobs. We've got to be a job friendly, business friendly environment, so that when you want to expand or grow your business locally, you're met with open arms, or you come in from out of the area and you want to relocate here, you're met with a bureaucracy that says we want your business here, we want you to employ two people, we want you to employ 50 people here, whatever it is that you're coming in with. We want a job-friendly, business-friendly environment, and it's not out there. People say, I'm for
that.
Business, mm-hmm. I'm for this, but the reality is when you walk up to the counter with a proposal, many, many people turn away discouraged.
Yeah, yeah.
All righty, we're in our last minute. So we got Chris Young running for Supervisor District 5, who comes from a business background, which is why he's concerned about business, because he's been running up that hill himself.
Correct.
We've had Sylvia Milligan from Recreation Outdoor Coalition. You can reach her at forest@reddingteaparty.com.
And I want to say a special thank you to Chandler, as usual, for being our great technical guy this morning, and to our husbands, Bill and Dan, for coming out with us on a very stormy Sunday morning
stormy.
When they could stay home and drink coffee.
Thanks to Wally Herger and Bill Miller Auto Transport for being our advertisers today. This program, We the People, is brought to you by the Redding Tea Party. It'll be on archive at KCNR1460.com, so you can review the program or send it to a friend who doesn't know about the Forest Service issues.
We stream worldwide on the web, so send it out.
See you next week, and Monday night, John Kapal from Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Group.